Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. We've got a special guest on today. I told you this week we were going to talk about building community. How do we do that? Even when the country's collapsing, maybe our states are collapsing, how do we build a strong, healthy community that will be resilient to be able to sustain itself even in the midst of decline or collapse? Well, we're going to talk about that today with Mr. Jeffrey Botkin. He is a friend of mine I've known for about 10 years, and anytime I need wisdom, counsel, understanding, I go to Mr. Botkin and ask him what's going on, what do we need to do. He is a wealth of knowledge on almost every topic. Jeffrey Botkin is a grateful American, husband, father of seven, grandfather of 10. 8 years ago, he moved his family out of a city of 2 million to a small town in Tennessee, and I've been there to see how they're setting things up. He's involved in the life of his local community, local church, and local business, and he serves on the board of T-Rex Arms. And we'll have a link below to T-Rex Arms, too. They have a lot of great accessories for firearms that I think you'd really enjoy looking at. You can get his weekly updates at jeffreybotkin.com. He has a little newsletter that goes out. And anyway, but I'm so glad he's going to be on today. You're going to really enjoy this. Those watching on all the different platforms, thank you so much for joining us. Please like, share, comment, and consider going to agendaweekly.com to become a subscriber and become part of what we're doing and get all the other resources we provide every week. But again, thank you so much for being with me today. I hope you have had a good week, a good July 4th. I hope you had a very special weekend of remembering all the things we have to be thankful for, where we came from, and hopefully that encouraged you to be strong and steadfast in standing for the truth today like our founders did. So thanks again. Mr. Botkin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Curtis, for doing the show and for getting me on and getting on all the amazing guests you've had on. And I hope that people who see these productions that you're doing and these interviews share them with other people. That's we unless we share this information, it just stays in a little tiny circle. So let me just say to all those who are watching, please continue to share Curtis Bowers' phenomenal videos and his newsletter, too.
Well, thank you so much for that. No, it's one person at a time is the way to build back an army that can withstand whatever's coming. And I'm so thankful for the people that watch these, because I know you're watching because you do care. You do want to understand the times, and you do want to know what you can do to make a difference. And so today we're going to talk about that. Just there's so many different aspects of this, Mr. Botkin. Where should we start in explaining what it is to build a healthy community right where you are?
Right. Well, I think the best place to start is to realize that when we look at the federal situation going on, well, even the international situation with the globalists and everybody who's working behind the scenes, doing things that we have no control over, and then at the federal level that we have no control over, well, we can stop and we can look at the things that we do have control over. And our founders understood this really well when they appealed to their friends and their relatives back in the 1760s, 1770s, when they were trying to make a decision. What do we do about our countrymen? What do we do about our king who's broken covenant with us and he's turned over all of our local affairs to a parliament in London and we don't even have control over that? Well, here's what we do have control over. And they understood this, and this is, I think, one reason that they actually were able to come together in unity and win the war, the War of American Independence. They realized that first they had to be people who could govern themselves, because they have complete control over that, you know, their own spirits, their own thoughts, their own actions, and then their own families. So the founders understood this, and the ministers who filled the pulpits in those days, or at least filled most of the pulpits, they understood everything has to start with self-governance. And then if we can do that, then we know a little bit more about how to govern a family. And then if we learn how to do that and we're good at that, then that begins to qualify us for governing bigger institutions like the local church or the local legislature. And that's what King George originally had allowed us to do. He gave us a charter, Curtis, to let us in each one of the colonies set up our own local governance with our own local legislature that we would elect, you know, people from our own midst, men of wisdom and men of courage and men of holiness. And so first, if we can govern ourselves, and then if we can really begin to govern our families and put our homes in order, put our homes in good order, then we can begin to govern the little institutions that we have in our own communities. And once we do that, if all we have thousands and thousands of communities that are really strong, and we're so good at governing ourselves, and we're so independent, and we're so free, we don't even want a big national government or even a big state government to dictate things to us, to take care of us like a nanny would. We want to take care of ourselves. And that really is the essence of freedom. And that's really where it begins. So the foundational building blocks of the United States of America, you know, first the colonies and then the United States of America, was the local county in the different states. And so we have so surrendered, you know, even the control of our families, you know, to people in the federal government who come up with this, you know, school curriculum for us, and then they want to take all of our children, and they want to govern our children, they want to teach our children and train our children. We've surrendered so much of that. But if we begin to get that back at the personal level, then the family level, then the county level, then we're standing in on really good territory to be able to tell the state and the federal government, you know, we're not even worried about what you're doing because we don't need you. We don't need your money. We don't need, you know, we don't need your taxation system. We don't need your school curriculum. We don't need any of the regulations that you're putting on us and on our farmers and on our transportation system and even our communication system. Curtis, I talked to some guys in my county last night about what they're doing to come up with an independent communication system, and they've already put it up. I mean, even if the internet goes down and even if the power grid goes down, they've got a way that all of us in this county can stay in touch with each other through a wireless system that they've already built and put up. So these are the kinds of things that give us freedom and give us independence and give us strength. And we're not dependent then on others, especially at a federal or a state level.
Right. No. And that's, I think it makes sense to the people listening, because we've talked about it so many times, Antonio Gramsci and those people that realized if we want big government, you have to break down the family, you have to break down the church and the local community, so they need big government. Because you can have as big a government as you want, but if people have healthy families, healthy churches, healthy communities, they don't need it. So there's no way to expand the power of government, because no one's interested, because they're doing just fine by themselves. So no, that is great. So one of the things that I saw you were writing about is, how do we decentralize ourselves? You know, we're the government is trying to centralize everything, so they slowly have their hooks in everyone in our country. We are dependent on them one way or another. And so you were writing some things about how we unplug ourselves from the system. So we are a part. If they want to collapse, they can collapse, but we're not going to. What are some things people can be doing to start thinking along those lines?
Right. Well, when we look at history, Curtis, and see and look and study the lives of the men who did this most successfully, because we're, you know, typically we human beings, we're a fearful people. You know, we gather together and we look for leaders who might be strong leaders, like Adolf Hitler, when things were really falling apart in Germany and people did not know how to govern themselves or control themselves or even control their spirits. They needed an outside influence to do that for them. And that's what made them so susceptible to a charismatic man who said, I have all the answers, just follow me. And we'll, you know, I will bring you into a new state of control and prosperity, because in Weimar Germany, everything was falling apart. The currency, and that's a story for another day that maybe we should talk about. There's so many lessons we can learn from that one period of history. And the 9 years of collapse that happened are beginning to parallel exactly, Curtis, the years that we are living through right now in the United States. But back to your question, the men who have been able to stand up so strong and so independently were men who found a reason to have faith and a God that they didn't know before that they could begin to trust. And once they knew that, and they knew the will of God, and they knew the authority of God, and they knew how to serve him according to his authority, there was nothing that could stop them. You know, there was nothing that would frighten them. There was nothing that would destabilize them. Their feet would not slip in anything that they did because they could trust a higher authority who really had everything in control. So that's really the first step, I think. It's, you know, and others who, there are people out there and there are people on the internet who are saying the same thing, but they're saying, you know, put your faith in your physical fitness, or put your faith in a new program for trying to earn money, or something like that. And it's a similar message, but the faith is going to the wrong thing. So if, first of all, if people can really understand the architect of the universe and the architect of nations, the architect of government, they know exactly what we need to shoot for. And this architect, the great creator of the universe, wants there to be decentralization so that no man has a lot of power. Every authority and every power that is given to man by God, it comes from his authority, and it's a very limited authority, even a father's authority in the home. Yes, fathers do have authority given to them by God, but it's given as a stewardship. It's extraordinarily limited in what they can do. And same for the local mayor, same for the county mayor, same for the governor of the state. I mean, they have legitimate and lawful authority according to the Bible, but it's not unlimited authority. They really have to be careful what they do. So if we can see that principle of decentralization, we will be breaking free more, a little bit more all the time. And then we will be focusing our attention on building up the independence of our government. So when you're asking about unplugging, you know, we need to unplug from, well, in our county, here's just a good example. They've been living for years and years and years thinking that, you know, there's no way that we, our little county, which is depressed, we can't seem to attract business. The only way we're going to be able to survive is to get grants from the federal government. And they don't fully understand, until recently, we've been trying to teach them this and tell them this, that any grant you get from the federal government in terms of money doesn't come from the government. They don't have any money. It has to come from other taxpayers in other counties. And that money has to be seized from them coercively, taken from them, and then redistributed to our county. And so we don't want to do that. It's hurting other people in other counties. So we need to get off that mentality that we're hooked into the federal government and we survive by the gifts that they give us. No, it's that would be confiscated property they're giving us. And actually, Curtis, what that means is, if we're advocating for that, then really what we're doing is we're becoming accomplices with a thieving government, and we're committing a form of theft when we cry out for more gifts and more grants and more subsidies and things from the government. So basically, we just have to say no to that. Look, we're going to make our own way. We're going to figure out how to build our own economy. And so this is what we're trying to do in our county. Cut off every dependency on all federal and state dollars. Earn our own money. Come up with manufacturing companies, come up with a robust agricultural system where we're generating real wealth by hard work. We're turning labor into wealth, and then we're selling it. And there are honest dollars being honestly earned that are coming into our county. And Curtis, in just the last 4 or 5 years in this county, we've really transformed it. I mean, there are independent businessmen who started businesses who've brought in well over $100 million into a county that was one of the most distressed counties in all of the United States. And so now the city fathers and the county leaders are seeing, you know, this actually is possible, that if people will just turn their labor into something intelligent and start marketing, you know, their products nationally and across state lines and even across international lines, that wealth can be returned and come back into this county. And we have a new source of independence and strength that we didn't have before. So that's just one way.
There's so much here, we can't cover it all, obviously, but those listening, we want to give you a vision of there is better ways of doing things than the way we've been doing them in the past. And, right. and we want to be consistent in what we believe. Just like he was saying there, if you're for trying to get money to your local community from other communities, well, that's just socialism in a glorified way. And we're supposed to be against those things where we take things from others and forcibly give them to somebody else. So we want to be consistent. But what's amazing is, and it's so encouraging to hear those stories, when we are consistent and we do things God's way, where he wants us to be productive and us to bless others through the abundance he gives us and to encourage our neighbors and stuff and what they can do, it does work. And it slowly, then the corruption that was going on there in your county is slowly disappearing, where they're like, we yes. don't want this money that doesn't belong to us. We want to use our own money to build our own community. And it's going to be so healthy and strong then because of that. And people are going to be drawn to it. And I think one of the key things you said was, we need to work at the local level to make our little towns, cities, counties friendly toward business. Business is what, free enterprise is what creates wealth. So you can go from poverty to wealth very easily if they're allowing people to prosper, allowing people to get going in businesses without the regulation and red tape. I've just seen that over my life, but it's
right.
Real briefly, what if people watching this, and we've talked about this in months past, if they're realizing where they live in a blue state, in a blue city where it's absolute totalitarian regulation on everything, what are some things you would say they should look for to maybe if they're considering relocating to a community of like-minded people? Just briefly, we've talked about it in the past, but just some things you might have to say about that, what to look for.
Sure. Yes. And I get this question so much more now, Curtis, because it seemed like a distant theory to people 10, 15 years ago. But there were men speaking about it, like Don McElhaney, you know, way back in the 80s, saying that the trajectory that we're on as a nation and in our cities, especially our big cities, is destructive. You know, we're going to be seeing the fruit of that come 2020. And he was dead right. And so were many of the others who were sounding the alarm. And now we're seeing the fruit of horrible policies that were being followed very early on. And so it all didn't happen just at one time, you know, in the year 2020, when things started to fall apart and there were riots and there was lawlessness. It happened before then. So here's what I would say to answer your question. Don't just say, oh, I've got to get out of the city. I just got to move to the country and then mission accomplished. Please be careful and be intelligent. We have people actually moving into our county from big blue cities on the West Coast and on the East Coast. And they just get on the internet. They look at the real estate listings and they just buy a property sight unseen. And they're looking at other counties too. And I think maybe they just buy the first country property that comes open. And that's not real smart. Now, the ones who are landing here in this county so happen to be landing in one of the stronger counties because there are people coming together in this county to build it up and make it safe and make it independent and make it healthy. So I would say, here's on my list, I would say before you jump, before you buy a property, the strongest thing you want to really be looking at is the condition of the churches in those counties. And you need to go check them out. You need to go visit some of the churches, talk to some of the people who attend these churches, because when everything comes down to the prosperity of an area, even as small as one county, either the blessing of God or the chastening of God is going to determine how well people do. And we have to get back to this idea. The founders very well understood it. If the churches in a particular county are diseased and they're weak and there's bickering and there's division and there's bad doctrine, and if you don't know your doctrine, you have access to Bibles. And even if you've never been to church, and even if you're not a Christian and don't claim to be a Christian, the health or the sickness of the Christian community in a county is going to chart the future for that county. And if you go into a county with weak churches and bad churches and unbiblical churches, and yeah, there can be very unbiblical churches, then you're just jumping out of the fire pan into the fire. So I'd look for counties that have clean, natural spring water and aquifers beneath them that haven't been made toxic by agricultural runoff. So you really have to look carefully for those things. Number three, I'd look for a sheriff. You know, does the sheriff understand the Constitution, or is he just a puppet of the state and the federal government? Do not move to a county if you've got a sheriff like that. And no matter if you're in a rural county right now, you've got to work to replace the sheriff if that sheriff is just a puppet who does not know his Constitution. He's weak. He answers to whatever the federal government says, or the FBI, or the state government, or the the Bureau of Investigation there in his own state. Make sure that there's a healthy agricultural economy, because if our transportation system goes down in this country, there will be no way to get food to all the different cities and towns, even the rural towns. And these little rural counties will be dependent on each other to feed each other. And so you want to find a place that has a robust agricultural economy going. And if it's not real robust, but it's just barely there, maybe you can help make it robust. We're trying to do that in our county. You know, so many farmers have just quit, farming over the last 20 years. They've got great land, and they have equipment, and they have knowledge, and we're trying to get that fired up again so that they can produce good food. So those are just three of the top things I would put on my list, Curtis.
Yeah, no, that's great. And there's so many others. I'll put the link below to an episode we did a couple months ago that goes into more of those type of details, because it's important to really be thoughtful if you're going to make the move, which is a big thing to do, but it's worth doing. You want to make a wise decision in that. You don't want to end up worse off than you started. So talk to me a little bit about what you've written about the faith and family co-ops and the security co-ops and ways people are coming together to provide things that are necessary to keep their counties healthy and strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, Curtis, as we've seen over the last really 50, 60, 70 years, the community aspect of living together in a small town or a small neighborhood, it's just been demolished. Even the architecture of our own homes. 100 years ago, homes were built so that families on the street could interact with each other. There were front porches. There were back porches. There were places where you could go for a stroll in the evening and see a dozen different families and neighbors and talk to them and be close to them. And the ladies would talk over the fence while they're hanging up their laundry, and they were close. The communities were close. We don't have that anymore. With cars, we drive into our little garage, two-car garages with tinted windows, shut the doors, and may go years without even speaking a word to our neighbors. That has to be rebuilt, a sense of community. And so a faith and family co-op is, one thing we're doing in our county, we're encouraging families to be free and independent and for the families to be strong together. And so we're big advocates of home education. That's been one thing that we have seen has given new life to families, in that the children get to know the dads and spend time with the fathers. And so that there's a two-parent family with a close connection, not only with the mother, but also with the father. And it makes the families really strong. And then they're having more children. And so then those families are getting together in little co-ops, doing things together, coming together to help the poor or to help with agricultural projects. We've here in our county, the families who get gardens started are teaching other families how to get gardens started, because we've lost so much of that local agricultural knowledge. We're trading chickens and trading bigger animals and steers and cows and crossbreeding them, and we're building again a self-sufficient agricultural economy, and so families have to get together to do that. Churches have to get together to do that. And so we're building bridges between the existing churches. People who have never spoken to each other from two different churches, for example, are learning that they have these neighbors that they really respect and admire and love, and they're talking to each other again. But all these things take time. I had a meeting with leaders from another church just last night, and this other pastor was saying, you know, we really do need to be getting together, and if we don't lean into this intention, we're just too busy, it'll never happen. So we're having to make room for these things in our schedules. And, you know, we will make room for the things that are really important. And I can't emphasize enough how critical it is for families to be closer together and for then their close communities to be closer together. And it's worth the effort that's put into doing that. You mentioned the security co-ops. If you are successful in building up the wealth and the riches of your county, that you have productive gardens and you have, you know, animals and horses and oxen and things that are going to be extraordinarily valuable, you will have robbers come into your county. You'll have marauders. You'll have people who don't work for their own stuff, and they're going to just want to come steal it from those who are productive. And so here's what we've learned from studying, and this scientists have done this, academics have done this, Curtis. This is a really interesting story. In the economies that fall and come apart, like Albania many decades ago, you know, Venezuela, Colombia, just in recent years have fallen apart. What we begin to see happening, the criminals band together to go around and steal whatever they can from anyone who has put away just even a little bit. And as they do this, they realize if they only have a few people in their little gang, they can be overpowered by families who try to resist them. So they make their gangs a little bigger and then just a little bit bigger until they get to about 200 people, a gang of 200. And we've seen this happen all over the world. Small gangs don't make it, but they don't have the character in the gangs to be anything bigger than 200. So it's kind of a stuck there, a 200 person army, but they move around and steal from people. So those of you out there who are doing the work to bring wealth to your county and stability, and you're putting things back that will preserve the lives of your wives and children and grandchildren, they're going to be coming for your stuff. So what you need to do is learn to talk together about how you can form a perimeter that can withstand an army of about 200 really desperate, wicked people who will kill, slaughter, and harm, and hurt, and rape, and pillage. And you've got to, you know, practice on that. You've got to get out there and train with whatever weapons you have. And then you have to have communication with your team so that you know where your perimeter is going to be and how prickly it can be so that you can withstand these people. And once they encounter you and your wall of resistance, then they melt away and they go look for a softer target. And then you've protected yourself and you're safe. But that is a security co-op that you need to put together for your community. And you need to be really serious about putting it together.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And this might be new thinking for some of you that think, oh, I've got my gun in my home to protect myself. And that's wonderful. You're even less likely to be attacked when you have that as opposed to the neighbor that doesn't have anything. But we know that the Marxists have been working to create rebellion, which makes chaos and lawlessness, and then to have from the top down that lawlessness be rewarded and be given legitimacy, like, oh, they have a right to do that. Well, when you see those things going on and you see that storm on the horizon, like Mr. Botkin was saying, if you study the 20th century, when that storm really gets going, the lawlessness will blow your mind, what goes on, and the slaughter and destruction and theft. And so these things, again, like you said once, Mr. Botkin, and I had an episode on that, better 7 years early than 7 minutes late, a saying from World War II. Right. It's so vital, people, to be thinking about these things right now. You say, well, it's not total chaos right now. No, it's not. But when you can see that's the direction we're heading, then you realize, okay, let me prepare now. So when it comes, if it does, I'm ready. I'm not blindsided by, oh, why? I didn't realize, you know, the storm was going to start raining. I forgot my umbrella. You know, when a storm's coming, it's going to do things, and you need to be prepared. And so, no, I love that. What about, talk a little bit about a health co-op, what that looks like, and some of those things.
Well, yeah, and those are a little bit more tricky. But if we can find in our communities very well-educated medical professionals and who can give advice to people on the kinds of things we need, I think we've seen a few communities come together and be really strong during 2020 when this COVID-19 supposed virus hit the scene. It was really early that medical information came out that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin would be very effective against that. And some communities acted immediately. I acted immediately and was able to buy some from another country because the United States government was cutting off those things. But I brought in enough into our county that we were able to share it around with people who really needed it. And we had some solutions that were better than the ones that were being offered. And so by getting together with knowledgeable health professionals, and I'm talking about medical doctors who really do their research and physicians' assistants and people who are reading the literature and they know carefully how to evaluate, biochemists and people who can understand many of these things, toxicologists who understand, and virologists who understand viruses and pandemics who may be on us. We find those people and we get advice from them. We try to lean on the most credible advice we can get and then say to them, okay, how do we organize? How do we protect the community? What kinds of things are truly protective? What kinds of things are mandates from the government which really are designed to harm the population? And how do we determine those things? So without continual communication between the actors and the players in this, we won't come to a good decision. And if we're dipping into hysteria on the internet, for example, we will migrate to really bad ideas, which are going to hurt our communities also. So the health co-op occurs. We have found in our county many of the most reliable people, and we connect them with those who are in need. We share the good information that needs to get out that is banned on the internet right now. I've had a couple of videos banned that I've tried to make because they drill down into some of these truisms that are being covered up by the government. So we have to get the information out however we can. And it's a lot easier to do it on a local level than it may be on a big international social media platform.
That's right. And a lot of you listening, I know you're the information people, which is a vital role in this whole thing, where you take the time to research and gather the information from the doctors that know what's going on and the different things. And you put it together in a nice handout for your church or for your neighbors. I studied this issue of COVID. Here's some natural remedies. Here's some medical remedies. And here's links to top doctors telling you, no, this works, this makes a difference. And so they can start to see the deception at the federal level, where you realize, why in the world would a Dr. Fauci, who's supposed to be there to care for the American people, stop us from learning about anything that might even be a solution to the problem, might help 10%. Right. And when you see the corruption, which I know you know that, we can't be oblivious to that. We need to realize it's always going to be deceptive. It's going to be twisted because it's working toward accomplishing an agenda of what they're trying to do. But the information is out there. Yes, a lot of times it gets pulled down, but there's all the time more platforms springing up where the truth can be spread for right now. And we need to be the people that diligently study and find good websites and people that do understand the times, and then consolidate that information in literature to give out to people, because that's one of the great ways we can love our neighbor, by helping them understand the times, even if they're not willing to invest that time. But it's there's so many parts of this that I know are important. And I know that as we look at, again, just becoming self-sufficient in inside of our families, inside of our church communities, in our local communities, we're going to be protected from so much of the heartache that could be coming as we have problems, interruptions of food, of power, of all the different things, because we are in a revolutionary state in our country right now. There's the people in control want to take things down, and we need to. Any closing thoughts, Mr. Botkin, of things maybe you can briefly touch on that we didn't cover, just to, again, stimulate them to have a vision of there's a lot of work they need to do.
Yes.
To be prepared at the local level.
Right. And what I'd like to encourage you all to consider just how powerful an influence you can be in your county, in your little county. In our county, which I mentioned earlier, was one of the most distressed and depressed counties in all of the United States. Well, some of the kids who really understood this best were the high school students who realized there's nothing here for me. And they developed attitudes of complete hopelessness. How will I ever survive? The only way, I've got to just pack up when I graduate from high school, leave the county, never come back, because there's no work, there's no jobs. Many of them were enticed by the local, the social services people, just get on welfare, and have been on welfare for 2 and 3 generations now, and don't work doing anything because they know it's so easy to just to get on welfare. Well, that's a kind of hopelessness that you, who are proactive, can demolish in your county. And one way you can do that is by helping some of these young kids get businesses started, helping those little businesses hire new people, help them learn to have a work ethic that they never had before in their life. And once you get that ball rolling, there's a momentum there that is just contagious. It breeds hope. It breeds new thinking, creative ways of thinking that, wow, we can, there's a need over here. There's a need here. We can do, we've got, you know, UPS comes into our county every day. FedEx comes in. We can build things and ship things out. We can use some of these new technologies. We've got robots being, manufacturing robots being imported into our county now that people have never seen before to do jobs that need to be done so that we can be more productive. And so things like these are inspiring young kids, changing their outlook, and they've got optimism now instead of pessimism, but they're also learning a work ethic. And that's one thing you can really, even if you just hire kids to work in your yard and you pay them and you show, well, you only pay them for work well done, and help them see the difference and help them with the work ethic. So Curtis, I would just say the power that you hold in your hands, just in your yard, you know, in your garden, your local garden, in your neighbors, just right on your street. It's an incredible, powerful influence that can really change the entire world just by starting right on your street, right in your family, right in your county.
That's right. No, with our children, grandchildren, and then our neighbors' children and grandchildren, and those at church, the young people God has blessed us with are our greatest resource. That's a human life that can change the world. And if we can help instill character and virtue and morality and encourage them in doing that, and then, of course, sharing the gospel if they're not Christian families to tell them there's real eternal hope, even if things are very dark in the world in which we live right now. So there's a lot to be doing. So I don't want you to be discouraged. I don't want you to think, oh, I can't do all that. No, you can't do all that today, but you can start doing that today. You can start making lists of things you can do as individuals, you can do as families, you can do in your local church to start bringing things up and making sure that church is a light to the community, organizing the businessmen to start thinking about how can we create jobs for these young people? They're valuable. We want them staying here. We don't want them moving somewhere else where we're going to lose the value of that individual. We want them to stay here so they can get married here and have children here. And we're going to have a prosperous, growing economy inside of our county, inside of this area. And there's things you can be doing to help that and accelerate that into happening. But again, Mr. Botkin, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it very much. And I thank those of you that are watching this. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate it greatly. Watch it over a couple times, learn the information, and then share, like, comment, do whatever you can to take this wealth of knowledge and maximize its impact. And that's something that you can be doing each day. But thank you. Don't be discouraged. God is still sitting right on his throne where he always will be. But he wants you to be accomplishing the things he's put you here to do. And that's what we want to encourage you to do. But we appreciate you greatly. Those that aren't subscribers, consider going to agendaweekly.com and subscribing there to become part of what we're doing by supporting us. It's $5 a month, but we greatly appreciate those that are willing to do that. But until next week, God bless you.